Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast with me, Maya Fisher-French.
And with me, Mapalo Maku.
Each week, we'll be discussing the stories we're working on and which you can read more about in the City Press.
So, Maya, this week you are talking about something that is so, so close to my heart. And really one of the reasons why we do what we do, why we want to educate people about personal finance, why we want to educate people about, you know, read the T's and C's in this contract, in this policies, in this investments that you do take on. And this week you wrote about, financial advisors and the fee structure. This is a big one, Maya. It really is a big one.
Sorry, Mapalo. Carry on, I interrupted.
No. So Maya, you did write a piece on these fees and just how ridiculous they can be. And sometimes how, you know, a financial advisor will continue getting a fee even if they are not working for it. So they have not seen you in years, but they are still getting commission. This is wrong. Why is it still happening?
You know, this is the grand question, Mapalo, this is the question. So this came about because a reader contacted me and said, you know what, I kid you not, she was signed up for a 30-year endowment policy and 30-year retirement annuity, okay?
30-year endowment.
Yeah, I'm going to need to tell you the kind of commissions that the broker would have been paid up front for that, because this is, remember, an old product. This would have been taken out in the 1980s or early 90s. So this is an old product. And so the advisor would have made a lot of money up front. Anyway, she's been paying religiously. She's kept her investments up. And she got to a point where she could no longer afford the premiums. And the reason, after 24 years she's been paying, she can no longer afford the premium. The advisor had signed her up for a 15% and 20% escalation, respectively.
Wow. Now,
20%, okay, so if you just do the maths on 20% escalation, even if her premium started at 100 Rand, by the time the 30 years ended, she would be paying nearly 20,000 Rand a month in premiums. That escalation, ongoing escalation, obviously made the product unaffordable. So she's reached a point now where she can't pay those premiums every month. Even if she just wants to reduce the premium, if she wants to make it paid up or she wants to reduce the premium, a surrender value applies, right? The termination fees or all these penalty clauses and all the rest.
Fees. For something that you have paid for religiously for 24 years, even with the ridiculous escalations, you go back to the company and say, you know what, I cannot afford this. Can I make it paid up? Or, you know, make it paid up, for example. They still want to penalize you.
Yeah. So they still wanted to penalize her. In fact, she wanted to move. And then on top of that, she wanted to actually move it to another platform. So remember,
to move the retirement annuity or the endowment?
I think both of them. She'd got to a point where she was very unhappy. And this is where, what had happened. The advisor had not spoken to her in 10 years. So 10 years ago, the person who originally had sold her this policy sold the business on. The new advisor had not contacted her in 10 years. She'd had no contact with them whatsoever.
So what happens to the ongoing fees, Maya?
She still gets the ongoing fees, and this is the whole point. So I sat with the product provider. So first I went to the product provider and I said, how does this all work? This poor woman's been paying for 24 years. You're still going to take a fee. And they said to me, and I said, look, what about advice? The advisor hasn't been advising. And this is quite critical, Mapalo, which I didn't realize or really think about, is that if the agent is tied to the companies. In this particular case, had the agent worked for the insurer who issued these policies, there could have been a conversation with the product provider and the agent as to whether, you know, how this was being dealt with, whether they could recoup the commissions. But the advisor was an independent. And then you have to go to the phase ombud and argue that, actually, I haven't heard from this person for 10 years. This advisor earned tens of thousands of rands from this woman. Over the years. Now, if she could get back that commission, she could at least, it would offset her termination fees, and she could at least come out in balance. And I think, Yeah, and I think, you know, so part of it is about, and if you actually go to the FAES Act itself, it specifies that a provider who provided advice has to actually do at least once a year a review. You have to have contact once a year.
Yeah.
And that's actually in the FAES Code of Conduct. That's the you know, so the advisor was not, you know, performing his duties in this particular case. Then now whether she can go to the FAES Ombud and fight for the fees, you know, that's another whole question.
That's another whole story and long process.
Exactly. But what I also just felt, Maplo, and this is a kind of conversation I also want to have, and I think our listeners need to think about this, is, you know, if I went, and yes, the advisor is wrong. Yes, the advisor was supposed to make contact once a year. Yes, had the advisor made contact with her, she would have stopped her escalations a while before, because they would have worked out that they were becoming unaffordable. This whole situation wouldn't have happened. Absolutely. However, what is the responsibility of the client?
Mm.
You know, if I take on a gym contract and I pay every month to the gym and I never go,
Most people don't.
Which most people don't, to be honest. Can I blame the gym? And as I said, yes, in this case.
You don't reach those fitness goals.
Yeah, but what about us? Are we doing enough? We're handing over commission every year to some person who sold us a policy 15 years ago. And that person's earning money out of us. But what do we do when we've got a problem? We write to City Press, or we write to My Money, or we write to Women in Finance.
And normally they see the problem at a much, much later stage, you know, when they want to change something, when there's a change in their lives, that's only when people take an interest in their finances.
Exactly. So she's coming up to retirement. Her escalation started becoming unaffordable. But now she's coming up to retirement. And this is also such an important conversation to understand, is that if you've been with an advisor for many, many years, they actually earn their money. And what I mean by that is the value of their money is earned at retirement, because that's when they're going to have to do a lot of work. That's when they have to do a retirement plan for you, when they have to work out if you've made sufficient money. All of those things are the conversations you will have at retirement. And you've kind of almost paid them for that over the years of the income that they've earned from you. But here, this isn't the case. She doesn't want to work with this man. She's no interest in him because, quite frankly, he's not very good, clearly.
He has never been there.
He's never been there. So she's lost that opportunity of having built up a relationship over time of somebody who knows her, understands her. And people say, yeah, well, I don't need an advisor. Sure, maybe you don't, but you're paying for one. So use it.
Certainly. Sure, Maya, I know it's a bit of a sore thumb when you start telling people that, you know what, the onus really is on you at the end of the day to make sure that your finances are in order. You know, what are you paying? Interrogate that. But really, in all fairness, sometimes people are so intimidated about personal finances. So when you have someone who's a financial advisor and they look like they know what they're doing, they look like they're qualified, you know what, they know what they're doing. You know, how does one know exactly? So for example, you get a policy, you're about to sign up, and you all you see is that, okay, you know what, I'll be paying $500 per month. How do you know that, you know, it will be escalating at 20% every single year? You know, how do you know that there's an ongoing fee, not just the commission, the you know, the upfront commission? You know, it's just this details, Maya, sometimes can be. And I mean, sometimes I've actually seen this where you're sitting in front of a financial advisor and they're going through the paperwork so quickly. It's lightning speed.
So I think what's important to know is that your product provider, whoever you've got the policy with or investment with, issues a benefit statement once a year. And you receive that benefit.
But isn't that too late, Maya? Isn't that too late?
It
because now I signed up for this thing, which is escalating at ridiculous amount. I've signed up to say, okay, there'll be an ongoing commission. You probably didn't even know that there was upfront commission of this much. So for me, it's like, isn't it a bit too late to be getting a statement where I actually don't know what I signed up for?
So I think the quotes today, and remember, we have improved. The world has is a better place now than it was 30 years ago.
It's not.
Okay. No. In terms of disclosure, so I think on the documents now, there is disclosure as what the commissions will be paid. And that's why I'm saying, even if you've signed one and you're listening to this thinking, flip, I better go and check how much my advisor is that I signed on 10 years ago, those benefit statements every year actually show you who your advisor is, what commissions, all of those things. So there is information. It's just about going and actually caring enough to get the information. I do think that there is an element of that as well. And I think the other, where it gets a little trickier, is that, you know, on an investment product now, they have this full disclosure. If you have a retirement annuity or an endowment, and I tell you, I've seen the endowment quotes where it shows how much commission the person's earning, because I had to it usually is the reason for you to say, hold on a second. But on life products, it's often very different. Where it can be, you know, the investment side, it tends to be a lot more, have a lot more disclosure than on the life products. So that's sometimes where.
I don't know, Maya, what is your thoughts around this? I mean, with life insurance, you know, disability, you know, that type, like the risk side, I normally don't really care, because I know either way, you know, they're going to, normally most of the companies ask you to do it through a financial advisor, even if it's like someone on the phone. So they do get the commission. So I don't know if there's a way around not having one. But I mean, it's really just built in there. I don't know how it works. Maybe I need to investigate more with that one.
Yeah, on life products, it's pretty much built in. It's not like with investment products. But you can buy directly. I mean, you can go online, and there are online insurance companies. But I must tell you, I've done the maths. It doesn't always work out cheaper, because they obviously have a lot of marketing spend that they have to spend on, to do the online, to keep the ad going. I haven't, in my personal case, when I've done the comparisons, I didn't find going direct necessarily was that much cheaper. And I have to be honest, I have a fantastic advisor. So he sits once a year and we review everything. And I find that useful. Listen to me, I know these products, I understand all of them, but for me, it's that discipline of sitting down once a year and really reassessing, you know, whether, well, like what life changes, what do we need to look at? How's everything working? And I think, again, it comes down to that gym thing, you know, use it. It's there. Your parents are. And Michael, you know, if you don't like the person, so this woman did not like this man, you know, obviously after 2 years of this relationship that had not existed. And sometimes people say to me, I don't want to go back to them because they'll just try and sell me another product.
I've heard people say that.
So then go try and find someone else, because you can transfer your policy to another advisor. And I think those, and I know that sounds a little bit easy to say, isn't it? Because I get a lot of people saying, who can I go speak to? So maybe we need to talk a little bit about, you know, how the fee structures are working now with things like RDR coming in, where advisors now are charging an advice fee that is separate from the sales fee.
What?
So you can go to them and actually pay for their time, or you can actually pay, and it's an advice fee. It's not, you can see it very clearly, it's not linked to a commission. So they're really trying to separate this stuff out.
Yes, I think that's a better way. But also I really think we do need to have a whole conversation on just the fees, that, you know, these are the fees to look out for when you're either taking this endowment product or an investment with a life company versus an asset manager, because there are fees as well with asset managers. But in terms of this cancellation fees, these penalties, if you want to make your stuff paid up, now you have to pay. That stuff just really drives me up the wall.
So we do, in the article that's will appear on Sunday in City Press, I actually, because these termination fees, I said to them, but I thought there was in the new rule which said there was no more termination fees after 10 years. And they said, yes, but that was only for products prior to 2005 when the legislation was brought in. So it's actually a table that explains to you. But basically, in 2005, I think it was, the maximum termination fee was set at 30%. But then
30% of your entire investment.
So oh, then wow. It went to 20%, but now what is actually happening is the cap decreases by 2% every year. So the longer you're holding that product, so after 10 years, basically it should run down to zero. That makes sense. So,
it's still saying all of these fees, whether they are running down, they are going up or down, whatever they decide that they're doing, you are effectively still paying it off in a way, isn't it?
Well, it does depend. Look, one of the big issues I have with the life products is the structure, and what I mean here is the life investment products. The structures, the fee structures are so complicated. I mean, I can tell you, before I printed this article, I ran it through the life provider. I said to him, do you know what? I actually have no idea what you're talking about, because he was explaining that, see, they calculate this and then they do that and then they spin the dial three times. And that is the problem. But the reality is you've got to look at it over the term of the product. That's what they do. So they say, well, yes, you'll pay a lot of the fee up front, but then the fees reduce for the rest of the time of the product. So therefore, over the full product, the fees should actually be in line with. And they did send me the internal rate of return and fees and all of that, and they compared it actually to an RA, an investment-linked RA, and the fees were actually the same. I can't prove that. I'm assuming they're accurate, okay? I'm assuming there's no way. No way. I don't know what's actuarial.
I have trust issues, okay? We will not get into the trust issues, but you are another just podcast where we're really just talking about the fee structure that people should look out for.
Yeah, but I think we mustn't let the actuaries in the room, because I promise you, we will have
they will cry by
the end of the podcast. No, they will be weeping. No. They'll feel like they're back in Stats 101.
Podcast. So no, we are not inviting them.
Okay, so I think before we get thoroughly depressed with fees and trying to work these things out, I just wanted to sum up very, 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 if you have a policy of any type, you are paying somebody commission. So at least go meet the person, have coffee with them. If you don't like them, find someone else. Okay.
Yes, and let the coffee be on them.
And let the coffee be on them. Absolutely. Yes. Because they've earned that. You've earned it. You've earned that coffee. But Mapalo, so talking about scary stats, okay, article you wrote. Okay, so Mapalo did an article this week on whose data is it anyway. And this was after you had attended a round table about data privacy. And then Mapalo went to this thing and she came back. She's, Maya, you have to go and watch this documentary called The Great Hack. Well, people, if you haven't watched it yet and you love Facebook and you love Twitter and whatnot, go and watch The Great Hack. I have never been so terrified in my whole life. My son has now been spending a lot of time checking out how to block cookies and Lord knows what else. He was even more terrified than I was. But maybe just take us through this whole thing about data scraping and collecting.
About data, yes. You know, Maya, we live in a dangerous world, and people seem to be in a bubble about social media and use of internet and literally just giving away information for free, right? So we all know that Facebook, you know, okay, I'm not going to say that on the podcast.
we are people who use Facebook to speak to our audience, so it's challenging, but continue.
Yes. Also, that's another thing, right? But one person explained Facebook as the biggest devil, evil the entire world has yet seen, right? So remember with cookies, with, you know, giving information on the internet, in the beginning, it was really just to enhance your experience as a consumer. So for example, if you were to go onto a website and you wanted to buy something, they would sort of, in the background, it does all this check, are you in South Africa? So if it's an American company, automatically changes to rands, you know, just so that your shopping experience becomes easier. You're not there converting. That was the whole point when people started collecting data, right, to enhance people's experience. But now it has just gone out of control, Maya. It has been, you know, social media, going onto different websites. You know, you might think that you're giving one person permission to store your information, but there's even in the terms and conditions, again, going back to terms and conditions that, you know, are written in such small print, you might find that they are giving access to information to maybe two or three or even four more providers whom you did not agree to, who you didn't think you were agreeing to. So with data, it's really just become the wild, wild west, Maya.
So I must tell you, it's very interesting. So since watching The Great Hack, you know, when it says, it pops up and says, you know, we use cookies. If you want to know, you know, our terms and conditions, I now click on it. I'm actually now clicking on it. And what I discovered is you can actually opt out of stuff. So it says there, do you give us permission to share it with another provider? I say no. Do you give us permission to market you? No. Do you? So in some of the sites, you can actually go on, and when you do click on it, you can actually, you know, tailor make that experience for you. So if they say, would you like it just to be a better user experience, which I do, because I must be honest, it does help me a lot when they already know a little bit about me because they pre-populate and things like that. But it's that part about sharing your information with other apps or other websites. That's the scary one. And that's actually the one that I think in The Great Hack that was part of what Cambridge Analytica did. They Facebook had an app on it that wasn't Facebook's app, and that was that app that was collecting all the information on everyone. So I think it's really, really worth just reading the article that Mapalo has written and just thinking a little bit about it. And if you do have access to Netflix or I think it was on Netflix, The Great Hack, just wake up. Just be aware and you know, be careful also. I mean, my children have now are specifically not. They do not have Facebook accounts. They don't have Instagram. They don't want their faces being on the internet. And I thought that was such an interesting. I mean, obviously, I don't know how that would affect my business and your business because we do
so much on social media.
Yeah, but you know, you also need to just be circumspect. Think about that. Anything you post is just public. And are there things that you want people to know about you? You know, are you comfortable with that information that's out there? And so I think it is.
Also, you know, I've heard some people saying, you know what, no, I'm not on Facebook, but I'm on Instagram. And I'm like, you are actually essentially on the same thing because Facebook owns Instagram.
And WhatsApp.
Also own WhatsApp as well. So, and Messenger. So really, you know, yeah, it's just scary, Maya. Like, I think people will get the full picture if you do watch that documentary. And also for me, what was scary, even without just getting into the movie as the documentary as such, is you don't know what they are doing with that information. You know, you do not know to what extent, what are they using that your information for? So, Mark Zuckerberg.
And I think also in your article, you also spoke just about safety, because of course, if our computers get hacked, our bank accounts get hacked. So you also spoke about things like, and this is a really big one, be careful about free Wi-Fi. You know, if you are on it.
I really love free Wi-Fi. I would get to a place and be like, oh, they don't have Wi-Fi here. And I remember in the round table, I think she had something at TransUnion. She says she does not, wherever she goes, she does not log on to any Wi-Fi. She says she hasn't been on to free Wi-Fi in the past 5 years. So for me, that told me a lot. It really told me a lot about safety regarding, you know, because, you know, we're thinking it's harmless, it's just Wi-Fi, but they can even access some information from your phone without you knowing it. It is ridiculous, Maya.
Oh, and the other one you said is turn off your computer. That's an interesting one. Why is it important? Because I often just put my computer to sleep.
Yeah. So normally they say if you would still have Wi-Fi connected to your phone, to your laptop, and they can still access some information. So sleeping or rest at whatever mode, it must be completely shut down. Because, you know, also I think you actually wrote an article about this, that hackers are getting smarter and smarter and smarter. So they find any loophole, you know, any chance they get, they will take. So just, you know, try not to hop onto any free Wi-Fi. Turn off your computer or at least turn off your Wi-Fi. But I know a lot of the times people forget, especially if it's in your home, you do forget to turn off the Wi-Fi. Also, with Wi-Fi, you know, put in a password, like a solid password. You know, I know people always hear you know, it says change your passwords frequently, and we take it for granted. But, you know, if you've had your password for over a year, it's definitely time to change it, because also that can provide that chance for hackers to access your details.
So I must tell you a little, we'll end off on this because I think we're going to podcast again. Our listeners are going to get on board. We're having a great conversation though. But so it was quite interesting for me was I've been starting to get these emails trying to blackmail me for porn sites. Okay. So, which is, it's great because I've never been on a porn site, to be honest. So I'm like, oh, I know that. And then it claims that it's got video footage because through my camera that it's hacked of me doing things, you know, and all this. No, I haven't. So these guys, apparently this is a huge tactic at the moment, and they go and blackmail people, and they're specifically asking for Bitcoin. But what was interesting is they had nearly my full password. They didn't have all of it, but they had quite a big partial of my password. They said, this is your password, so you know it's real. And that's when I realized, I thought, one of the sites I've used somewhere has been hacked. They've got some of partial passwords. So I went in and changed all my passwords. Yeah. And that was quite scary for me, was that these guys, irrespective of what they had, you know, obviously I knew the rest was dubious. I feel sorry for people who are frequently on porn sites and are not sure whether to pay the Bitcoin or not.
They're like, where do I even start? I didn't have Bitcoin.
So unfortunately, I knew, but what was worrying was that they actually had a partial of that, of my password. So really, I think this is a just really good advice, is go on, when you go onto a website, check out those cookie conditions. You know, if you have the options, if you can click or change them, and decide whether those cookie terms and conditions look too onerous, and do you really want to be on this website? So just, we have to, like with the commissions and advisors, taking responsibility, we've got to take responsibility of our actions on internet as well.
So that's a wrap for today. If our listeners would like to learn more about these or any money-related topics, they can go to the City Press website or to your website,
womanandfinance.co.za,
or my website, mayaonmoney.co.za.
And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a WhatsApp voice note to 064-554-3959. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Because we want to know what it is that you want to know. You've been listening to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, featuring the contributors of the City Press Personal Finance Pages.